Is there a desire in you to not just attend revival, but live in revival? Welcome to the Revival Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Isaiah Saldivar. I've been in revival for the last 10 years, as well as traveling and being a part of many revivals throughout the United States. I'm going to be sharing with you how to live a radical lifestyle of revival on a daily basis. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the broadcast. We are live with our day 27. Let me fix my camera here. Day 27 of our Bible in 90 days. Thank you so much for being here. It's going to be another amazing day as we read through the Bible together. Can you guys believe it's day 27? Who's been here since day one? Let me know in the chat. This is crazy though. We're on day 27. Excited. Did I say we're on day 27? We're on day 27. Yeah, that's the day we're on. We're doing the entire Bible in 90 days. Every single day, we're live at 2 p.m. reading through the scripture. So those of you that set your alarm, you've been with us every day, thank you. It's become part of your routine. It's become part of my routine. It's like, I can't imagine not doing this. I'm like, at 2 o'clock, I got to be live. I got to be reading the Bible. So it's great. It's great. So I appreciate you all that are here. Let's give you guys a minute to load in the chat. We are on 2 Kings chapter 5, and we're going to chapter 15 today. So chapter 15. All right, so let's get started. We're using the 90-day Bible plan or the Bible in 90 days on the YouVersion or Life Church Bible app if you're joining with us. I'll have it on screen as well so you can kind of, you know, read as we read on screen and it'll be there for you, okay? Here we go. 2 Kings chapter 5. Let me see, how can I move this up? Let me fix this. 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 1. The king of Aram had great admiration for Naaman, the commander of his army, because through him the Lord had given Aram great victories. But though Naaman was a mighty warrior, he suffered from leprosy. At this time, Aramean raiders had invaded the land of Israel, and among their captives was a young girl who had been given to Naaman's wife as a maid. One day the girl said to her mistress, "I wish my master would go to see the prophet in Samaria. He would heal him of his leprosy." So Naaman told the king what the young girl from Israel had said. "Go and visit the prophet," the king of Aram told him. "I will send a letter of introduction for you to take to the king of Israel." So Naaman started out carrying as gifts 750 pounds of silver, 150 pounds of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. Oh, just casually. "Oh, what do you got in your trunk?" "Just 150 pounds of gold." The letter to the king of Israel said, "With this letter, I present my servant Naaman. I want you to heal him of his leprosy." When the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes in dismay and said, "Am I God that I can give life and take it away? Why is this man asking me to heal someone with leprosy? I can see that he's just trying to pick a fight with me." But when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes in dismay, he sent this message to him. "Why are you so upset? Send Naaman to me, and he will learn that there is a true prophet here in Israel." So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and waited at the door of Elisha's house. But Elisha sent a messenger out to him with this message. "Go and wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan River, then your skin will be restored and you'll be healed of your leprosy." But Naaman became angry and stalked away. "I thought he would certainly come out to meet me," he said. "I expected him to wave his hand over the leprosy and call in the name of the Lord, his God, and heal me. Aren't the rivers of Damascus, the Abana and the Farpar, better than any of the rivers of Israel? Why shouldn't I wash in them and be healed?" So Naaman turned and went away in rage. But his officers tried to reason and said, "Sir, if the prophet told you to do something very difficult, wouldn't you have done it? So you should certainly obey him when he says something simple, like go wash and be cured." And this is a problem so many of us have. We want God to tell us to do something complicated. And when he tells us to do something simple, like share the gospel with your friends and family, we don't do it. But we're like, "Lord, send us to another nation, to a tribe, and we'll do it." And the Lord's like, "I told you to do something simple, and you don't do it. Yet you want me to tell you to do something complicated? Preach." So Naaman went down to the Jordan River and dipped himself 7 times, as the man of God had instructed him. And his skin became as healthy as the skin of a young child, and he was healed. Then Naaman and his entire party went back to find the man of God. They stood before him, and Naaman said, "Now I know that there's no God in all the world except in Israel. So please accept a gift from your servant." But Elisha replied, "As surely as the Lord lives, whom I serve, I will not accept any gifts." And though Naaman urged him to take the gift, Elijah refused. Then Naaman said, "All right, but please allow me to load 2 of my mules with earth from this place, and I'll take it back home with me. From now on, I will never again offer burnt offerings or sacrifices to any other God except the Lord. Yes, we are live." Tammy. However, may the Lord pardon me in this one thing. When my master, the king, goes into the temple of the god Ramon to worship there and leans on my arm, may the Lord pardon me when I bow too. Go in peace, peace, Elisha said. So Naaman started home again. But Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said to himself, my master should not have let this Aramean get away without accepting any of his gifts. As surely as the Lord lives, I will chase after him and get something from him. So Gehazi set off after Naaman. When Naaman saw Gehazi running after him, he climbed down from his chariot and went to him. Is everything all right? Naaman asked. Yes, Gehazi said, but my master sent me to tell you that two young prophets from the hill country of Ephraim have just arrived. He would like 75 pounds of silver and two sets of clothing to give to him. By all means, take twice as much silver, Naaman insisted. He gave him two sets of clothing and tied up the money in two bags. And he sent two of his servants to carry the gifts for Gehazi. But when they arrived at the citadel, Gehazi took the gifts from the servant and sent the men back. Then he went and hid the gifts in his house. When he went into his master, Elisha asked him, where have you been, Gehazi? I haven't been anywhere, he replied. But Elisha asked him, don't you realize that I was there in the spirit when Naaman stepped down from his chariot to meet you? Is this time to receive money and clothing, olive groves and vineyards, sheep and cattle, male and female servants? Because you've done this, you and your descendants will suffer from Naaman's leprosy forever. And when Gehazi left the room, he was covered with leprosy and his skin was white as snow. Eek. Don't take gifts that God didn't tell you to take. Preach. Chapter 6. One day the group of prophets came to Elisha and told him, as you can see, this place where we meet with you is too small. Let's go down to the Jordan River where there are plenty of logs. There we can build a new place for us to meet. All right, he told him, go ahead. Please come with us, someone suggested. I will, he said. So he went with them. When they arrived at the Jordan, they began cutting down trees. But as one of them was cutting down a tree, his axe head fell into the river. Oh, sir, he cried, it is a borrowed axe. Where did it fall? The man of God asked. And when he showed him the place, Elisha cut a stick and threw it into the water at that spot. Then the axe head floated to the surface. Grab it, Elisha said, and the man reached out and grabbed it. When the king of Aram was at war with Israel, He would confer with his officers and say, we will mobilize our forces at such and such place. But immediately Elisha, the man of God, would warn the king of Israel, do not go near the place, for the Arameans are planning to mobilize their troops there. So the king of Israel would send word to the place indicated by the man of God. Time and time again, Elisha warned the king so that they would be on alert there. The king of Aram became very upset over this. He called his officers together and demanded, which of you is the traitor who has informed the king of Israel of my plans? It's not us, my lord the king, one of the officers replied. Elisha, the prophet in Israel, tells the king of Israel even the words you speak in the privacy of your bedroom. Go and find out where he is, the king commanded. So I sent troops to seize him. And the report came back, Elisha is at Dothan. So one night the king of Aram sent a great army with many chariots and horses to surround the city. When the servant of the man of God got up early the next morning, he went outside. There were troops, horses, and chariots everywhere. Oh, sir, what will we do now? The young man cried to Elisha. Don't be afraid, Elisha told him. There are more on our side than on theirs. Then Elisha prayed. This is a good prayer. Oh, Lord, open his eyes and let him see. And the Lord opened the young man's eyes, and when he looked up, he saw the hillside around Elisha was filled with horses and chariots of fire. As the Aramean army advanced towards him, Elisha prayed, O Lord, please make them blind. So the Lord struck them with blindness as Elisha had asked. Then Elisha went out and told them, You have come the wrong way. This isn't the right city. Follow me, and I'll take you to the man you're looking for. And he led them to the city of Samaria. As soon as they had entered Samaria, Elisha prayed, O Lord, now open their eyes and let them see. So the Lord opened their eyes and they discovered that they were in the middle of Samaria. When the king of Israel saw them, he shouted to Elisha, My father, should I kill them? Should I kill them? Of course not, Elisha replied. Do we kill prisoners of war? Give them food and drink and send them home again to their master. So the king made a great feast for them and sent them to their master. And after that, the Aramean raiders stayed away from the land of Israel. Sometime later, however, King Ben-Hadad of Aram mustered his entire army and besieged Samaria. As a result, there was a great famine in the city. The siege lasted as long that a donkey's head sold for 80 pieces of silver and a cup of dove's dung sold for 5 pieces of silver. Ugh, that's gross. Dove's dung? One day as the king of Israel was walking along the wall of a city, a woman called to him, "Please help me, my lord, my king." He answered, "If the Lord doesn't help you, what can I do? I have neither food from the threshing floor nor wine from the press to give you." But then the king asked, "What is the matter?" She replied, "This woman said to me, 'Come on, let's eat your son today, then we'll eat my son tomorrow.' So we cooked my son and ate him." That escalated quickly. "Then the next day I said to her, 'Kill your son so we can eat him.' But she has hidden her son." When the king heard this, he tore his clothes in despair. And as the king walked along the wall, the people could see that he was wearing a burlap under his robe next to his skin. "May God strike me and even kill me if I don't separate Elisha's head from his shoulders this very day," the king vowed. Elisha was sitting in his house with the elders of Israel when the king sent a message to summon him. But before the messengers arrived, Elisha said to the elders, "A murderer has sent a man to cut off my head. And when he arrives, shut the door and keep him out. We will soon hear his master's footsteps following him." While Elisha was still saying this, the messenger arrived and the king said, "All this misery is from the Lord. Why should I wait for the Lord any longer?" Elisha replied, "Listen to this message from the Lord. This is what the Lord says. By this time tomorrow in the markets of Samaria, 6 quarts of flour will only cost 1 piece of silver, and 12 quarts of barley will only cost 1 piece of silver." The officer assisting the king said to the man of God, "That couldn't even happen if the Lord opened the windows of heaven." But Elisha replied, "You'll see it happen with your own eyes, but you won't be able to eat any of it." Now there were 4 men with leprosy sitting at the entrance of the city gates. "Why should we sit here waiting to die?" they asked each other. "We will starve if we stay here, but the famine in the city, we will starve if we go back there. So we might as well go out and surrender to the Aramean army. If they let us live, so much the better. But if they kill us, we would have died anyway." So at twilight, they set for the camp of the Arameans. But when they came to the edge of the camp, no one was there. For the Lord had caused the Aramean army to hear the clatter of speeding chariots and galloping horses and the sounds of a great army approaching. "The king of Israel has hired the Hittites and Egyptians to attack us," they cried to one another. So they panicked and ran into the night, abandoning their tents, horses, donkeys, and everything else. As they fled for their lives, when the men with leprosy arrived at the edge of the camp, they went into one tent after another, eating and drinking wine, and they carved off silver and gold clothing and hid it. Finally, they said to each other, "This is not right. This is a day of good news, and we aren't sharing it with anyone. If we wait until morning, some calamity will certainly fall upon us. Come on, let's go back and tell the people at the palace." So they went back to the city and told the gatekeepers what happened. "We went out to the Aramean camp," they said, "and no one was there. The horses and donkeys were tethered and the tents were in order, but there wasn't a single person around." This is NLT. Then the gatekeeper shouted the news to the people in the palace. The king got out of bed in the middle of the night and told his officers, "I know what has happened. The Arameans know we are starving. So they left their camp and have hidden in the fields. They're expecting us to leave the city, and then they will take us alive and capture the city." One of his officers replied, "We had better send out scouts to check into this. Let them take 5 of the remaining horses. If something happens to them, let it be no worse than if they were to stay here and die with the rest of us." So the 2 chariots of horses were prepared, and the king sent out scouts to see what happened to the Aramean army. They went all the way to the Jordan River, following a trail of clothing and equipment that the Arameans had thrown in their mad rush to escape. The scouts returned and told the king about it. Then the people of Samaria rushed out and plundered the Aramean camp. So it was true that 6 quarts of choice flour were sold that day for 1 piece of silver, and 12 quarts of barley grain were sold for 1 piece of silver, just as the Lord had promised. The king appointed his officer to control the traffic at the gate, but he was knocked down and trampled to death as the people rushed out. So everything happened exactly as the man of God had predicted when the king came to his house. The man of God said to the king, "By this time tomorrow in the market of Samaria, 6 quarts of choice flour will cost 1 piece of silver, and 12 quarts of barley grain will cost 1 piece of silver." The king's officers had replied, "That couldn't happen even if the Lord had opened the windows of heaven." And the man of God had said, "You'll see it happen with your own eyes, but you won't be able to eat any of it." And so it was, for the people trampled him to death at the gate. Sorry, my thing keeps freezing. Chapter 8, the woman from Shunem returns home. Elisha told the woman whose son he had brought back to life, "Take your family and move to some other place, for the Lord has called for a famine on Israel, that will last 7 years. So the woman did as the man of God instructed. She took her family and settled in the land of the Philistines for 7 years. After the famine ended, she returned from the land of the Philistines and went to see the king about getting her house and her land. As she came in, the king was talking with Gehazi, the servant of the man of God. The king had just said, "Tell me some stories about the great things Elisha has done." And Gehazi was telling the king about the time Elisha had brought a boy back to life. At the very moment, the mother of the boy walked in, making her appeal to the king about her house and land. "Look, my lord the king," Gehazi exclaimed. "Here's the woman now, and this is her son, the very one Elisha brought back to life." "Is this true?" the king asked her, and she told him the story. So he directed one of his officials to see everything she had lost was restored to her, including the value of any crops that had been harvested during her absence. Elisha went to Damascus, the capital of Aram, where King Ben-Hadad lay sick. When someone told the king that the man of God had come, the king said to Hazael, "Take the gift to the man of God. Then tell him to ask the Lord, 'Will I recover from this illness?'" So Hazael loaded down 40 camels with the finest products of Damascus as a gift for Elisha. He went to him and said, "Your servant Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram, has sent me to ask, 'Will I recover from this illness?'" And Elisha replied, "Go and tell him you will surely recover. But actually, the Lord has shown me that he will surely die." Elisha started at Hazael. Why can't I say that? Hazael, with a fixed gaze until Hazael became uneasy. Then the man of God started weeping. "What's the matter, my lord?" Hazael asked him. Elisha replied, "I know the terrible things you'll do to the people of Israel. You'll burn their fortified cities, kill their young men with the sword, and dash their little children to the ground, and rip open their pregnant women." Hazael responded, "How could a nobody like me ever accomplish such great things?" "How is that great?" Elisha answered, "The Lord has shown me that you're going to kill the king of Aram." When Hazael left Elisha and went back, the king asked him, "What did Elisha tell you?" And Hazael replied, "He told me that Hazael. But the next day, Hazael took a blanket, soaked it in water, and held it over the king's face until he died. Then Hazael became the next king of Aram. Jehoram, son of King Jehoshaphat of Judah, began to rule over Judah in the 50th year of the reign of Joram, son of Ahab, king of Israel. Jehoram was 32 years old when he became the king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 8 years. But Jehoram followed the example of the kings of Israel and was wicked as King Ahab, for he married one of Ahab's daughters. So Jehoram did what was evil in the Lord's sight. But the Lord did not want to destroy Judah, for he had promised his servant David that his descendants would continue to rule, shining like a lamp forever. And during Jehoram's reign, the Edomites revolted against Judah and crowned their king. So Jehoram went with all his chariots to attack the town of Zer. The Edomites surrounded him and his chariot commanders, but he went out at night and attacked them. Under the cover of darkness, but Jehoram's army deserted him and fled to their homes. So Edom has been independent from Judah to this day. The town of Libna was also revolted about that same time. The rest of the events in Jehoram's reign and everything he did are recorded in the book of the history of the kings of Judah. When Jehoram died, he was buried with his ancestors in the city of David. Then his son Ahaziah became the next king. Ahaziah, son of Jehoram, began to rule over Judah in the 12th year of the reign of Joram, son of Ahab, king of Israel. Ahaziah was 72 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 1 year. His mother was Athaliah, a granddaughter of King Omri of Israel. Ahaziah followed the evil example of King Ahab's family. He did what was evil in the Lord's sight, just as Ahab's family had done. He was related by marriage to the family of Ahab. Ahaziah joined Joram, son of Ahab, in the war against King Hazael of Aram at Ramoth-Gilead. These names! When the Arameans wounded King Joram in the battle, he returned to Jezreel to recover from the wounds he had received at Ramoth. Because Joram was wounded, King Ahaziah of Judah went to Jezreel to visit him. Chapter 9. Meanwhile, Elisha the prophet had summoned a member of the group of prophets. "Get ready to travel," he told him, "and take the flask of olive oil with you. Go to Ramoth-Gilead and find Jehu, son of Jehoshaphat, son of Nimshi. Call him into a private room away from his friends and pour the olive oil over his head and say to him, 'This is what the Lord says. I anoint you to be the king over Israel.' Then open the door and run for your life. So the young prophet did as he was told and went to Ramoth-Gilead. When he arrived there, he found Jehu sitting around with the other army officers. "I have a message for you, commander," he said. "For which one of us?" Jehu asked. "For you, commander," he replied. So Jehu left the others and went into the house. Then the young prophet poured the olive oil over Jehu's head and said, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I anoint you king over the Lord's people, Israel. You are to destroy the family of Ahab, your master. In this way, I will avenge the murder of my prophets and all the Lord's servants who were killed by Jezebel. The entire family of Ahab must be wiped out. I'll destroy every one of his male descendants, slave and free alike, anywhere in Israel. I'll destroy the family of Ahab as I destroyed the families of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, and Baasha, son of Ahijah. Dogs will eat Ahab's wife Jezebel at the plot land in Jezreel, and no one will bury her." Then the young prophet opened the door and ran. Jehu went back to his fellow officers, and one of them asked him, "What did that madman want? Is everything all right?" "You know a man like that babbles on," Jehu replied. Some of us know people like that. I might be one of those people. Who knows? "You're hiding something," they said. "Tell us." So Jehu told them. He said to me, "This is what the Lord says. I have anointed you to be king over Israel." They quickly spread out their cloaks on the bare steps and blew the ram's horns, shouting, "Jehu is king." So Jehu, son of Jehoshaphat, son of Nimshi, led a conspiracy against King Joram. But King Joram was wounded in the fighting and returned to Jezreel to recover. Oh, wait. Now Joram had been with the army at Ramoth-Gilead, defending Israel against the forces of King Hazael of Aram. But King Joram was wounded in the fighting and returned to Jezreel to recover from his wounds. So Jehu told the men with him, "If you want me to be king, don't let anyone leave town and go to Jezreel to report what we've done." Then Jehu got into a chariot and rode to Jezreel to find King Joram, who was lying there wounded. King Ahaziah of Judah was there too, for he had gone to visit him. Oh no, my internet's cutting. Don't do this. Don't do this. I lost connection. I think we're back. Are we back? Okay. Let me know in the chat if we're still clear. My little meter where it tells me my internet went to zero and now it's back. Usually once it goes to zero, it cuts out. But let me check my router. Hold on. I have to look under my desk because my router's in the corner. But my router's still on. So here we go. Okay. Then Jehu got into a chariot and rode to Jezreel to fight King Joram, who was lying there wounded. King Ahaziah of Judah was there too, for he had gone out to visit him. The watchman on the tower of Jezreel saw Jehu and his company approaching. All good? Okay. So he shouted to Joram, "I see a company of troops coming. Send out a rider to ask if they're coming in peace," King Joram ordered. So horsemen went out to meet Jehu and said, "The king wants to know if you're coming in peace." Jehu replied, "What do you know about peace? Fall in behind me." The watchman called out to the king, "The messenger has met them, but he's not returning." So the king sent out a second horseman, and he rode up to them and said, "All good? Okay, cool, 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 cool." Man, usually when it goes to zero, it doesn't reconnect, but praise the Lord, it reconnected. That's awesome. All right. The watchman called out, "The messenger has met them, but he's not returning." So the king sent out a second horseman. He rode up to them and said, "The king wants to know if you come in peace." Again, Jehu answered, "What do you know about peace? Fall in behind me." The watchman exclaimed, "The messenger has met them, but he isn't returning either. It must be Jehu, son of Nimshi, for he's driving like a madman. Quick, get my chariot ready," King Joram commanded. Then King Joram of Israel and King Ahaziah of Judah rode out in their chariots to meet Jehu. They met him at the plot of land that had belonged to Naboth of Jezreel. King Joram demanded, "Do you come in peace, Jehu?" Jehu replied, "How can there be peace as long as the idolatry and witchcraft of your mother Jezebel are all around us?" Preach. Then King Joram turned the horses around and fled, shouting to King Ahaziah, "Treason, Ahaziah!" But Jehu drew his bow and shot Joram between the shoulders. The arrow pierced his heart and he sank down and died in his chariot. Jehu said to Bidkar, his officer, "Throw him into the plot of land that belonged to Naboth of Jezreel." Do you remember when you and I were riding along behind his father Ahab? The Lord pronounced this message against him. "I solemnly swear that I'll repay him here on this plot of land," says the Lord, "for the murder of Naboth and his son that I saw yesterday. So throw him out on Naboth's property, just as the Lord said." When King Ahaziah of Judah saw what was happening, he fled along the road to Beth Hagen. Jehu rode after him, shouting, "Shoot him too!" So they shot Ahaziah in his chariot at the ascent of Gur near Ibleam. He was able to go on as far as Megiddo, but he died there. That's not a good place. You don't ever want to die at Megiddo. His servants took him by the chariot. I think I got a Megiddo pizza the other day at Mod Pizza. Isn't it called Megiddo? That's Megiddo. Okay, Megiddo. I don't know. His servants took him by chariot to Jerusalem, where they buried him with his ancestors in the city of David. Ahaziah had become king over Judah in the 11th year of the reign of Joram, son of Ahab. When Jezebel, the queen mother, heard that Jehu had come to Jezreel, she painted her eyelids and fixed her hair and sat at a window. When Jehu entered the gate of the palace, she shouted at him, "Have you come in peace, you murderer? You're just like Zimri, who murdered his master." Jehu looked up and saw her in the window and shouted, "Who is on my side?" And two or three eunuchs looked out at him. "Throw her down," Jehu yelled. So they threw her out of the window, and her blood splattered against the wall and on the horses. And Jehu trampled her body under his horse's hooves. Someone said frozen. Refresh. Oh, it came back? Okay, good. And Jehu trampled her body under his horse's hooves. Then Jehu went into the palace and ate and drank. Afterward, he said, "Someone go out and bury this cursed woman, for she's the daughter of a king." But when they went out to bury her, they found only her skull, her feet, and her hands. This is sounding like a murder documentary. When they returned to Jehu, he stated, "This fulfills the message from the Lord, when he spoke through the prophet, his servant Elisha from Tishbe. At the plot of land in Jezreel, dogs will eat Jezebel's body. Her remains will be scattered like dung on the plot of land in Jezreel, so that no one will be able to recognize her." Eef. Chapter 10. Ahab had 70 sons living in the city of Samaria. So Jehu wrote letters and sent them to Samaria, to the elders and the officials of the city, and to the guardians of King Ahab's sons, he said. "The king's sons are with you, and you have at your disposal chariots, horses, a fortified city, and weapons. As soon as you receive this letter, select the best qualified of your master's sons to be your king, and prepare to fight for Ahab's dynasty." But they were paralyzed with fear and said, "We've seen the two kings couldn't stand against this man. What can we do?" So the palace and the city administrators, together with the elders and the guardians of the king's sons, sent this message to Jehu. "We are your servants and will do anything you tell us. We will not make anyone king. Do whatever you think is best." Jehu responded with a second letter. "If you're on my side and you're going to obey me, bring the heads of your master's sons to me at Jezreel by this time tomorrow." Now the 70 sons of the king were cared for by the leaders of Samaria, where they'd been raised since childhood. When the letter arrived, the leaders killed all the 70 of the king's sons. They placed their heads in baskets and presented them to Jehu at Jezreel. A messenger went to Jehu and said, "They brought the heads of the king's sons." So Jehu ordered, "Pile them into two heaps at the entrance of the city gate and leave them there until morning." This is so barbaric. This is literally so barbaric. In the morning, he went out and spoke to the crowd that had gathered around them. "You're not to blame," he told them. "I'm the one who conspired against my master and killed him. But who killed all these? You can be sure that the message of the Lord has spoken concerning Ahab's family and will not fail. The Lord declared through his servant Elijah that this would happen." Then Jehu killed all that were left of Ahab's relatives living in Jezreel and all his important officials, his personal friends, and his priests. So Ahab was left without a single survivor. Then Jehu sent out for Samaria along the way while he was at Beth Aked of the shepherds. He met some relatives of King Ahaziah of Judah. "Who are you?" he asked them. And they replied, "We are relatives of King Ahaziah." Oh no, the internet cut again. I'm frozen. Okay, I think we're back. Ugh, don't cut out on me. None of them escaped. If my internet goes out and won't let me restart, then finish reading today. Do not get off. Just finish reading today on your own. If it does, I'm praying it doesn't, but it's shaky right now. My router's still on. So when that router turns red, when the router's red, we are dead. So we're going to keep pushing. I'm praying that it doesn't go out. We've had these weird internet issues here and there, outages. Anyways, but I don't have a text. Usually they text me when the internet goes out. When Jehu left there, he met Jehonadab, son of Rechab, who was coming to meet him. After they greeted each other, Jehu said to him, "Are you as loyal to me as I am to you?" "Yes, I am," Jehonadab replied. "If you are," Jehu said, "then give me your hand." So Jehonadab put out his hand and Jehu helped him into his chariot. Then Jehu said, "Now come with me and see how devoted I am to the Lord." So Jehonadab rode along with him. When Jehu arrived in Samaria, he killed everyone who was left there from Ahab's family, just as the Lord had promised through Elijah. When Jehu called a meeting of all the people of the city and said, Ahab's worship of Baal was nothing compared to the way I will worship. Wait, what? Then Jehu called a meeting of all the people of the city and said to them, Ahab's worship of Baal was nothing compared to the way that I will worship him. What? Is that a typo? Isn't Jehu good? Ahab's worship of Baal was nothing compared to the way I will worship him. Therefore, summon all the prophets and worshipers of Baal and call together. Oh, he must be tricking them. Okay, I'm like, what? Okay, therefore, call all the prophets and worshipers of Baal and call together all the priests. See it to that every one of them comes, for I'm going to offer a great sacrifice to Baal. Anyone who fails to come will be put to death. But Jehu's cunning plan was to destroy all the worshipers of Baal. Okay, I was like, wait, Jehu, what happened? He's tricking them. Then Jehu ordered, prepare a solemn assembly to worship Baal. So they did. He sent messengers throughout all of Israel, summoning those who worship Baal, and they came. Not a single one remained behind, and they all filled the temple from Baal from one end to the other. And Jehu instructed the keeper of the wardrobe, be sure that every worshiper of Baal wears one of these robes. So the robes were given to them. I forgot about the story. Then Jehu went into the temple of Baal with Jehonadab, son of Rechab. Jehu said to the worshipers of Baal, make sure no one who worships the Lord is here. Only those who worship Baal. So they were all inside the temple to offer sacrifices and burnt offerings. Now Jehu had stationed 80 of his men outside the building and had warned them, if you let anyone escape, you'll pay for it with your own life. As soon as Jehu had finished sacrificing the burnt offering, he commanded his guards and officers, go in and kill all of them and don't let a single one escape. So they killed all of them with their swords, and the guards and officers dragged their bodies outside. Then Jehu's men went into the innermost fortress of the temple of Baal. They dragged out the sacred pillar used in the worship of Baal and burned it. They smashed the sacred pillar and wrecked the temple of Baal, converting it into a public toilet as it remains to this day. So they literally turned Baal's temple into a big restroom, a porta potty, a public toilet. That's crazy. He did not, however, destroy the gold calves at Bethel and Dan, which Jeroboam, son of Nebat, had caused Israel to sin. Nonetheless, the Lord said to Jehu, you've done well in following my instructions to destroy the family of Ahab. Therefore, your descendants will be kings of Israel down to the fourth generation. But Jehu did not obey the law of the Lord, the God of Israel, with all his heart. He refused to turn from the sins that Jeroboam had led Israel to commit. At about that time, the Lord began to cut down the size of Israel's territory. King Hazael conquered several sections of the country, east of the Jordan River, including all the land of Gilead, Gad, Reuben, and Manasseh. He conquered the area from the town of Aroer by the Arnon Gorge as far as Gilead and Bashan. The rest of the events in Jehu's reign and everything he did and all his achievements are recorded in the book of history of the kings of Israel. When Jehu died, he was buried in Samaria. Then his son Jehoahaz became the next king. In all, Jehu reigned over Israel from Samaria for 28 years. Your guys' comments are wild sometimes. Chapter 11. When Athaliah, the mother of King Ahaziah of Judah, learned that her son was dead, she began to destroy the rest of the royal family. But Ahaziah's sister, Jehosheba, the daughter of King Jehoram, took Ahaziah's infant son, Joash, and stole away from him among the rest of the king's children, who were about to be killed. She put Joash and his nurse in a bedroom, and when they hid from Athaliah, the child was not murdered. Joash remained hidden in the temple of the Lord for 6 years while Athaliah ruled over the land. In the seventh year of Athaliah's reign, Jehoiada, the priest, summoned the commanders, the Karite mercenaries, and the palace guard to come to the temple of the Lord. He made a solemn pact with them and made them swear by oath of loyalty there in the Lord's temple. Then he showed the king's son. These names, they just tie up my tongue. Jehoiada told them, this is what you must do. A third of you who are on duty on the Sabbath are to guard the royal palace itself. Another third of you are to stand guard at the Sur gate. And the final third must stand guard behind the palace guard. These three groups will all guard the palace. The other two units who are off duty on the Sabbath must guard for the king at the Lord's temple. From a bodyguard around the king and Form a bodyguard around the king and keep your weapons in hand. Kill anyone who tries to break through. Stay with the king wherever he goes. So the commanders did everything as Jehoiada, the priest, ordered. The commanders took charge of the men reporting for duty that Sabbath, as well as those who were going off duty. And they all brought them, to Jehoiada, the priest. And then he supplied him with the spears and small shields that once belonged to King David and were stored in the temple of the Lord. The palace guards stationed themselves around the king with their weapons ready. They formed a line from the south of the temple to the north side all around the altar. Then Jehoiada brought out to Joash, the king's son, placed the crown on his head, and presented him with a copy of God's law. They anointed him and proclaimed him king, and everyone clapped their hands and shouted, "Long live the king!" When Athaliah heard the noise by the palace guards and the people, she hurried to the Lord's temple to see what was happening. When she arrived, she saw the newly crowned king standing in the place of authority by the pillar, as was the custom at the times of coronation. The commanders and the trumpeters were surrounding him, and people from all over the land were rejoicing and blowing trumpets. When Athaliah saw all this, she tore her clothes in despair and shouted, "Treason! Treason!" Then Jehoiada, the priest, ordered the commanders who were in charge of the troops, "Take her to the soldiers in front of the temple and kill anyone who tries to rescue her." For the priest said, she must not be killed in the temple of the Lord. So they seized her and led her out of the gate where horses entered the palace guard, and she was killed there. Then Jehoiada made a covenant between the Lord and the king and the people that they would be the Lord's people. He also made a covenant between the king and the people. And all the people of the land went over to the temple of Baal and tore it down. They demolished the altars and smashed the idols to pieces. And they killed Matan, the priest of Baal, in front of the altars. Jehoiada, the priest, stationed guards at the temple of the Lord. Then commanders, the Karaite mercenaries, and the palace guards, and all the people of the land escorted the king from the temple of the Lord. They went through the gate of the guards and into the palace, and the king took his seat on the royal throne. So all the people of the land rejoiced, and the city was peaceful because Athaliah had been killed at the king's palace. Joash was 7 years old when he became king. What? 7 years old when he became king? That's crazy. Chapter 12. Joash began to rule over Judah in the seventh year of King Jehu's reign in Israel. He reigned in Jerusalem for 40 years. His mother was Zibiah from Beersheba. All his life, Joash did what was pleasing in the Lord's sight because Jehoiada, the priest, instructed him. Yet even so, he did not destroy the pagan shrines, and the people still offered sacrifices and burned incense there. One day, King Joash said to the priest, "Collect all the money brought as a sacred offering to the Lord's temple, whether it's for regular assessment, a payment of vows, or a voluntary gift. Let the priest take some of that money to pay for whatever repairs are needed at the temple." But by the 23rd year of Joash's reign, the priest still had not repaired the temple. So King Joash called for Jehoiada and the other priests and asked them, "Why haven't you repaired the temple? Don't use any more of your money for your own needs. From now on, it must all be spent on temple repairs." So the priest agreed not to accept any more money from the people, and they also agreed to let others take responsibility for repairing the temple. Then Jehoiada the priest bored a hole in the lid of a large chest and set it on the right hand side of the altar at the entrance of the temple of the Lord. The priest guarding the entrance put all the people's contributions into the chest. Whenever the chest became full, the court secretary and the high priest counted the money that had been brought to the Lord's temple and put it into bags. Then they gave the money to the construction supervisors, who used it to pay the people working on the Lord's temple, the carpenters and the builders. We're on chapter 12. The masons and the stonecutters. They also used the money to buy timber and finish stoneworking for repairing the Lord's temple, and they paid any other expenses related to the temple's restoration. The money brought to the temple was not used for making silver bowls, lamp snuffers, basins, trumpets, my voice is going out, or other articles of gold or silver for the temple of the Lord. It was paid to the workmen who used it for the temple repairs. No accounting of this money was required from the construction supervisors because they were honest and trustworthy men. However, the money that was contributed for guilt offerings and sin offerings was not brought into the Lord's temple. It was given to the priests for their own use. All right. About this time, King Hazael of Aram went to war against Gath and captured it. Then he returned to attack Jerusalem. King Joash collected all the sacred objects that Jehoshaphat, Jehoram, and Ahaziah, the previous kings of Judah, had dedicated, along with what he himself had dedicated. He sent them all to Hazael, along with the gold and the treasuries of the temple and the royal palace. So Hazael called off his attack on Jerusalem. The rest of the events in Joash's reign and everything he did are recorded in the book of history of the kings of Judah. Joash's officers plotted against him and assassinated him at Beth Milo on the road to Silla. The assassins were Josachar, son of Shimeath, and Jehozabad, son of Shomer, both trusted advisors. Joash was buried with his ancestors in the city of David. Then his son Amaziah became the next king. All right, chapter 13. These names are just so similar, but then different wording. Jehoahaz, son of Jehu, began to rule over Israel in the 23rd year of King Joash's reign in Judah. He reigned in Samaria 17 years. But he did what was evil in the Lord's sight, and he followed the example of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, continuing the sins that Jeroboam had led Israel to commit. So the Lord was very angry with Israel, and he allowed King Hazael of Aram and his son Ben-Hadad to defeat them repeatedly. Then Jehoahaz prayed the Lord's help, and the Lord heard his prayer, for he could see how severely the king of Aram was oppressing Israel. Excuse me. So the Lord provided someone to rescue the Israelites from the tyranny of the Arameans. Then Israel lived in safety again as they had in former days. But they continued to sin. Following the evil example of Jeroboam, they also allowed the Asherah poles in Samaria to remain standing. Finally, Jehoahaz's army was reduced to 50 charioteers, 10 chariots, and 10,000 foot soldiers. The king of Aram had killed the others, trampling them like dust under his feet. The rest of the events and Jehoahaz's reign, everything he did, and the extent of his power are recorded in the book of the history of the kings of Israel. When Jehoahaz died, he was buried in Samaria. Then his son, Jehoash, here we go, same names, Jehoash became the next king. Jehoash, son of Jehoahaz, son of Jehoahaz began to rule over Israel in the 37th year of King Joash's reign in Judah. He reigned in Samaria 16 years, but he did what was evil in the Lord's sight, and he refused to turn from sins that Jeroboam, son of Nebat, had led Israel to commit. The rest of the events in Joash's reign and everything he did, including the extent of his power and war with King Amaziah of Judah, are recorded in the book of the history of the kings of Israel. When Joash died, he was buried in Samaria with the kings of Israel. Then his son Jeroboam II, second edition, became the next king. When Elisha was in the last illness, Jehoash of Israel visited him and wept over him. My father, I see the chariots and charioteers. I'm about to shed tears from this. Charioteers of Israel, he cried. Elisha told him, get a bow and some arrows. And the king did as he was told. Elisha told him, put your hand on the bow. And Elisha laid his own hands on the king's hands. Then he commanded, open that eastern window. And he opened it. Then he said, shoot. So he shot an arrow. Elisha proclaimed, this is the Lord's arrow, an arrow of victory over Aram, for you will completely conquer the Arameans at Aphek. Then he said, now pick up the other arrows and strike them against the ground. So the king picked them up and struck them on the ground 3 times. But the man of God was angry with him. You should have struck them around 5 or 6 times, he exclaimed. Then you would have beaten Aram until it was entirely destroyed. Now you'll be victorious only 3 times. Then Elisha died and was buried. Groups of Moabite raiders used to invade the land each spring. Once, when some Israelites were burying a man, they spied a band of these raiders, so they hastily threw the corpse into the tomb of Elisha and fled. As soon as the body touched Elisha's bones, the dead man revived and jumped to his feet. How crazy is that? Read that. They threw the bones of a dead man into Elisha's tomb, and the man came back to life. That's some serious anointing right there. King Hazael of Aram had oppressed Israel during the reign of King Jehoahaz, but the Lord was gracious and merciful to the people of Israel, and they were not totally destroyed. He pitied them because of the covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And to this day, he still has not completely destroyed them or banished them from his presence. King Hazael of Aram died, and his son Ben-Hadad became the next king. Then Joash, son of Jehoahaz, recaptured from Ben-Hadad, son of Hazael, the towns that had been taken from Jehoash's father, Jehoahaz. Jehoash, look at, there's like three names right there. Defeated Ben-Hadad on three occasions, and he recovered the Israelite towns. All right, we're almost there. Chapter 14. Amaziah, son of Joash, began to rule over Judah in the second year of the reign of King Jehoash of Israel. Amaziah was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 29 years, and his mother was What's up all this Jehoiadin from Jerusalem. Amaziah did what was pleasing in the Lord's sight, but not like his ancestor David. Instead, he followed the example of his father Joash. Amaziah did not destroy the pagan shrines, and the people still offered sacrifices and burnt incense there. When Amaziah was well established as king, he executed the officials who assassinated his father. However, he did not kill the children of the assassins, for he obeyed the command of the Lord as written by Moses in the book of the law. Parents must not be put to death for the sins of their children, nor children for the sins of their parents. Those deserving of death must be put to death for their own crimes. Amaziah also killed 10,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt. He also conquered Selah and changed its name to Jokthiel, as it's called that to this day. One day, Amaziah sent messengers with this challenge to Israel's king Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, the grandson of Jehu. Come and meet me in battle. But King Jehoash of Israel replied to King Amaziah of Judah with this story. Out in the Lebanon mountains, a thistle sent a message to a mighty cedar tree. Give your daughter in marriage to my son. But just then, a wild animal of Lebanon came and stepped on the thistle, crushing it. You have indeed defeated Edom, and you're proud of it. But be content with your victory and stay at home. Why stir up trouble that will only bring disaster on you and the people of Judah? But Amaziah refused to listen. So King Jehoash of Israel mobilized his army against King Amaziah of Judah. The two armies drew up their battle lines at Beth Shemesh in Judah. Judah was routed by the army of Israel, and its army scattered and fled home. King Jehoash of Israel captured Judah's king, Amaziah, son of Joash, and grandson of Ahaziah, at Beth Shemesh. Then he marched to Jerusalem, where he demolished 600 feet of Jerusalem's wall from Ephraim Gate to the Corner Gate. He carried off all the gold and silver and all the articles from the temples of the Lord. He also seized the treasure from the royal palace, along with hostages, and then returned to Samaria. The rest of the events in Jehoash's reign and everything he did, including the extent of his power and his war with King Amaziah of Judah, are recorded in the book of history of the kings of Israel. When Jehoash died, after this we go into Chronicles where it repeats all these names. Oh, you should have let me get there. I'm scared. All right. The rest of these events in Amaziah's reign are recorded in the book of history of the kings of Judah. There was a conspiracy against Amaziah's life in Jerusalem, and he fled to Lachish. But his enemies sent assassins after him, and they killed him there. They brought his body back to Jerusalem on a horse, and he was buried with his ancestors in the city of David. All the people of Judah had crowned Amaziah's 16-year-old son, Uzziah, as king in the palace of his father, Amaziah. After his father's death, Uzziah rebuilt the town of Elath and restored it to Judah. My voice is scratchy. Jeroboam II, the son of Jehoash, began to rule over Israel in the 15th year of King Amaziah's reign in Judah. He reigned in Samaria 41 years. He did what was evil in the Lord's sight and refused to turn from the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, had led Israel to commit. Jeroboam II recovered the territories of Israel between Leb Hamath and the Dead Sea, just as the Lord, the God of Israel, had promised through Jonah, son of Amadiah, the prophet from Gath-Hepher. For the Lord saw the bitter suffering of everyone in Israel, and there was no one in Israel, slave or free, to help them. And because the Lord had not said he would blot out the name of Israel completely, he used Jeroboam II, the son of Jehoash, to save them. The rest of the events in the reign of Jeroboam II and everything he did, including the extent of his power, his wars, and how he recovered from Israel, both Damascus and Hamath, which had been belonged to Judah, are recorded in the book of history of the kings of Israel. When Jeroboam II died, he was buried in Samaria with the kings of Israel. Then his son Zechariah became the next king. Chapter 15. We're almost there. It's not too long. All right, here we go. Uzziah, son of Amaziah, began to rule over Judah in the 27th year. Wait, what? Oh, the 27th year of the reign of King Jeroboam the second of Israel. He was 16 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 52 years. 16 when he's king? I was at the skate park when I was 16. His mother was Jecoliah from Jerusalem. He did what was pleasing the Lord's sight, just as his father Amaziah had done. But he did not destroy the pagan shrines, and the people still offered sacrifices and burned incense there. The Lord struck the king with leprosy, which lasted until the day he died. He lived in isolation in a separate house. The king's son Jotham was put in charge of the royal palace, and he governed the people of the land. The rest of the events in Uzziah's reign and everything he did are recorded in the book of history of the kings of Judah. When Uzziah died, he was buried with his ancestors in the city of David, and his son Jotham became the next king. Zechariah, son of Jeroboam II, began to rule over Israel in the 38th year of King Uzziah's reign in Judah. He reigned in Samaria 6 months. Zechariah did what was evil in the Lord's sight and his ancestors had done. He refused to turn from the sins Jeroboam, son of Nebat, had led Israel to commit. Then Shalem, son of Jabesh, conspired against Zechariah, assassinating him in public, and became the next king. The rest of the events in Zechariah's reign are recorded in the book of history of the kings of Israel. So the Lord's message to Jehu came true. Your descendants will be kings of Israel down to the fourth generation. Shalem, son of Jabesh, began to rule over Israel in the 39th year of King Uzziah's reign in Judah. Shalem reigned in Samaria only 1 month. Then Mehanahem, son of Gadi, went to Samaria from Tirzah and assassinated him, and he became the next king. The events of Shalem's reign, including his conspiracy, are recorded in the book of history of the kings of Israel. At that time, Menahem destroyed the town of Tappua and all the surrounding countryside as far as Tirzah because its citizens refused to surrender the town. He killed the entire population and ripped open the pregnant women. I was not ready. No warning. No warning for that. Menahem, son of Gadi, began to rule over Israel in the 39th year of King Uzziah's reign in Judah. He reigned in Samaria 10 years. But Menahem did what was evil in the Lord's sight during his entire reign. He refused to turn from the sins that Jeroboam, son of Nebat, led Israel to commit. Then King Tiglath-Pileser of Assyria invaded the land. But Menahem paid him 37 tons of silver to gain his support in tightening his grip on royal power. Menahem extorted the money from the rich of Israel, demanding that each of them pay 50 pieces of silver to the king of Assyria. So the king of Assyria turned from attacking Israel and did not stay in the land. The rest of events in Menahem's reign and everything he did are recorded in the book of history of the kings of Israel. When Menahem died, his son Pekahiah became the next king. Pekahiah, son of Menahem, began to rule over Israel in the 50th year of King Uzziah's reign in Judah. He reigned in Samaria 2 years. But Pekahiah did what was evil in the Lord's sight. He refused to turn from the sins that Jeroboam, son of Nebat, had led Israel to commit. Then Pekah, son of Remaliah, the commander of the Pekahuha army, conspired against him. With 50 men from Gilead, Pekah was a... Why can't we just say Pekah? Just give him a nickname. Pekah assassinated the king, along with Argob and Aria, in the citadel of the palace of Samaria. And Pekah reigned in his palace. The rest of events in Pekahiah's reign and everything he did are recorded in the book of history of the kings of Israel. Sad. Pekah, son of Remaliah, began to rule over Israel in the 52nd year of King Uzziah's reign in Judah. He reigned in Samaria 20 years. But Pekah did what was evil in the Lord's sight, no surprise. He refused to turn from the sins of that Jeroboam, son of Nebat, had led Israel to commit. And during Pekah's reign, King Tiglath-Pileser of Assyria attacked Israel again. And he captured the towns of Ijon, Abelbeth-Makkah, Genoa, Kadesh, and Hazor. He also conquered the regions of Gilead, Galilee, and all of Naphtali. And he took the people to Assyria as captives. Then Hoshea, son of Elah, conspired against Pekah and assassinated him. He began to rule over Israel in the 20th year of Jotham, son of Uzziah. The rest of the events in Pekah's reign are recorded in the book of history of the kings of Israel. Jotham, son of Uzziah, began to rule over Judah in the second year of King Pekah's reign in Jerusalem. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 16 years. His mother was Jerusha, the daughter of Zadok. Jotham did what was pleasing the Lord's sight. He did everything his father Uzziah had done, but he did not destroy the pagan shrines, and the people still offered sacrifices and burnt incense there. Let's try it together, chat. He rebuilt the upper gate of the temple of the Lord. The rest of the events in Jotham's reign and everything he did are recorded in the book of history of the kings of Judah. In those days, the Lord began to send King Rezin of Aram and King Pekah of Israel to attack Judah. When Jotham died, he was buried with his ancestors in the city of David, and his son Ahaz became the next king. All right, we did it, ladies and gentlemen. We finished day number 27. Day number 27 of the Bible in 90 days is done. We're not even at 1 month yet. We're not even 1/3. If you're liking these streams and you're like, I'm going to miss these when they're done, you got lots of time. We're not even 1/3 of the way there. We are barely, not even on day 30 yet. We're on day 27, but we're pushing and we're plowing and we're getting there. I mean, we've come a long way since day number 3, day number 4, where I thought, you know, this is long, but it's good. It's a privilege that we get to read the Bible every day. There's people in China that would die for a Bible, and we get to go live every day reading the Bible. I mean, what an amazing job to have. What an amazing life we get to live to read this every day. It's amazing. I like how Carl would just randomly appear. Yeah, he does that once in a while. So we have a prayer call that we just ended. It starts at 1 o'clock every Thursday, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Then at 2 p.m. to 3 p.m., we do our Bible reading. So we just got done with our hour-long prayer call. If you are a monthly partner, you will get a link to that. It's the same link every week. Just join in there. You can monthly partner on my website. You also get 70 old school sermons. There's the link there. It's on screen. It's in the chat. Partner with us. We're crowdfunded, viewer supported, which is the same thing. I just said it twice, which means the people that watch our content support us. That's how we survive. You guys already know we've been demonetized on Instagram, on Facebook, and on TikTok because, you know, we say some biblical stuff. And when you're talking against the culture and the world, they don't like it. And these platforms demonetize you, shadow ban you, all of that. It's all good. It is what it is. We're going to keep plowing and pushing. But your guys' support goes a long way. That's my point. So thank you guys for all the support and love. We love Carl. Yes. Alyssa is doing much better today. But yeah, she's been 2 weeks extremely sick. She's had a fever for 2 weeks straight. Literally, her temperature has not dropped for 2 weeks. So be praying for her. Continue to pray for her. Holding down the fort. We're pushing. We're plowing. The show must go on. And the Lord is on the move, okay? We're almost a month. We're almost a month. You can watch a replay. I thought we weren't going to make it. Look, here's the deal. If my internet goes out while we're doing these calls, which it hasn't yet, thank you, Lord. We're 27 days in. We have not had one internet outage that's cut us off. But if the internet does go out, just read the rest of the day yourself, okay? We're not going to go live again when it's back on to read it again. Just read the rest of the day yourself. And now if it goes out right at the start of the broadcast, of course, we'll like, you know, try to do it in a few hours or something. But yeah, it's live. It's internet. It's technology. It is what it is. Cameras go out. Internet goes out. Computers go out. It happens. But just for future, because today I was kind of worried. I'm like, oh, I think it might go out. Just for future reference, if it does go out. Yeah, sickness going around. I know that's the case for a lot of people. She had a surgery getting her nose fixed because she broke it in high school and it needed to be fixed. She was having a hard time breathing and it was a thing she needed to get done. So they straightened her nose because it's always been crooked because she broke it in high school. They rebroke her nose. They fixed it and they fixed her sinuses and she had some deviated septum and other things that she needed to get done. So yeah, her body did not respond good to that. We read every single day. We read every single day at 2 o'clock. Every single day we're here at 2, live. So I appreciate you guys being here. It's been great. You guys are hanging on. Everybody's been doing good. Oh, tomorrow my mom will be reading. For all of you that love my mom, shout out to my mom who's always in the chat. My mom, Janelle, will be reading tomorrow's. So yes, I know you guys liked her. You're like, oh, she reads so good. She reads awesome. You know, she's the one that taught me to read because I was homeschooled. So shout out to my mom for teaching me how to read. The reason why I don't read off a printed Bible, a couple reasons. Reason number one is my head would be down like this the entire time. Reason number two is you guys wouldn't be able to see it on screen. So a lot of people are watching this in their car. They're on their break at work. They're on their TV sitting back and they like to follow along and read. Like, for example, my grandma, when she watched it, she likes following along on the screen. So if I read a printed Bible, I can't put it on screen and you guys can't follow along. And some people do need to follow along just to help them process it. And some people enjoy having it on screen. So I like having the virtual Bible on screen. I try to do that no matter what, just so you guys can see it. Let me know, though, in the chat. Do you guys like it on screen? I think you guys do. I mean, you don't need a full screen to be me. Like, right? The sides don't need to be full. So I also thought about having chat on screen, but I think that's going to be too distracting. I was going to do half the screen in the Bible, then the chat. But I'm like, for some people, it's too distracting seeing the chat on screen. So I'm just going to leave the chat off screen, keep the Bible on screen. Yeah, I was homeschooled my whole life. Yeah, you read along. Okay, yeah, so we're going to do that. I know some people want me to read out of a printed Bible. It's the Bible either way. It's the Bible either way. So we're going to leave it on screen. And yeah, you can follow in your printed Bible. You can highlight in your printed Bible. I'm super proud of you, and I know the Lord is going to reward all of us for being in His Word, spiritually edifying. This is like the gym spiritually when we're reading the Bible. It's like working out spiritually. Yeah, okay. So everybody likes it on screen. So yeah, we're leaving it on screen. We're leaving it on screen. Praise the Lord. You're on a cruise ship? That's amazing, Cindy. I love that. I love this community because it's like people are, like, in our prayer calls, people are driving Amazon. They're at work. They're on the prayer call. It's awesome. It's awesome. So I love that people are just all over the place watching this. That's the beauty of social media and virtual live stream content. It's like at a service, you know, you got to be there, but here we could just be anywhere. That is a pigeon, yes. All right, so we've come to the conclusion. It's too distracting to have the chat on screen, but you guys like the Bible on screen. So that's good. We're going to leave it. And we already know you guys don't want any background music. No instrumental. Today was difficult. So good reading. It was. It was just names. It was so many names. Half the reading was like, this guy was the king of this guy. Was the king of this guy. And Hoash and Noash and hash browns and pickled peppers. I'm like, what? All right. I love you all very much. We will be live again tomorrow. We most likely will have videos recorded this weekend too. I haven't been posting a lot of videos because we've been live every day and it kind of feels like a lot already of being behind the camera, but we may have some videos posted this weekend. We will see. Either way, we'll be live every day, and Monday we'll have a teaching, Hebrews probably, or maybe a topical teaching. We'll see. We might break it up. And then Tuesday we'll have our mass deliverance and healing. So you guys are getting something every day. Okay. Thank you guys for supporting and partnering. Please be at the prayer call on Thursdays. I love you guys so much. I'm glad you guys love me and my pigeon. Thank you very much. We'll see you guys. Salute, double salute, triple salute, four-time salute. We'll see you guys tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Revival Lifestyle Podcast. If you like what you heard, go to www.isaiahsaldivar.com for more content. And please follow me on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram @Isaiah Saldivar. See you next week.